Hey, Robert.
Hi, Aaron.
So there's a new book out about one of our favorite ingenuism topics, which is Elon Musk. It's a biography by Isaacson, who I've read a few of his books, and I really like his books. He, of course, famously wrote the biography of Steve Jobs. My favorite of his is the one on Leonardo da Vinci. He also did one that I think we both read on Dauda, who so the woman who contributed a lot to the invention of CRISPR. But now the book on Elon Musk is coming out. I don't think either of us have read the book yet, but I've seen reviews and I saw an interview with Isaacson about the book, or about elements of the book. But what is it? What makes Elon Musk so interesting from the perspective of ingenuism?
Well, because he's a walking, talking, living embodiment of ingenuism. I mean, maybe we should have named it Muskism, but it's not just about Elon Musk. He's just a incredible representation of it, both in terms of what he does, but also the results that it produces. And that's what ingenuism is really about. It's about adopting the framework that lets you produce amazing results. They're probably not going to be on the scale of Elon Musk, but whatever you're trying to do, if you want massive results, you have to channel the same factors that Elon Musk does, which really comes down to having a life or a business or an approach that focuses on being connected. And I have not read the new biography, but there was a biography written about 8 years ago that probably isn't that different, not quite the same access, but having the same themes of Elon Musk being super interested in space travel and going to Mars just purely from a personal standpoint, and then deciding he needed to start a rocket company because there was no company out there that could do or would do what he wanted accomplished. And I remember a good friend of mine, a college roommate, was running the Planetarium Society in LA at the time. And Elon Musk came to visit them because he wanted to talk about Mars. And they're like, well, Mars is just a little piece of the entire. And so he went off and continued looking and eventually founded SpaceX. And in the first biography, they talk about how SpaceX employees talk about he went from being someone casually interested in rocketry to being someone who was an expert in rocketry. And that wasn't by going and getting a PhD in rocketry and writing a thesis. I think it was by getting connected to both the written work, the information that's available on rockets, but also talking to all of the top engineers at SpaceX sort of exhaustively in order to figure out what it was that they knew that he needed to know in order to really get a grasp on what they were trying to accomplish. So
Yeah, I
connections
mean,
incredibly, go ahead.
he strikes me as this incredible. He has lots of different interests, although clearly going to Mars is maybe the thing he's most passionate about. But he has lots of passions. He's interested in lots of different things, and he's not idle about it. That is, whatever he's interested in, he seems to go out and find information and connect with people and learn things, and then, if the opportunity is there and he invest in it and make a business out of it, sometimes even just investing in it, making a business out of it and moving on, like he did with, I don't know, with a tunneling company and with the maybe even with the one that has planting chips in the brain, the one that's so. But he's interested in so many different things, and he's constantly looking and he's constantly engaged with the world, both the world of technology and the world, more widely. Often, often that gets him in trouble. Sometimes even justifiably, it gets him in trouble. But you have to admire just the curiosity and the openness that he has.
Absolutely. And so the second piece after getting connected is you have to start doing things. Being curious and learning has no impact on the world if you don't start actually doing things. And in ingenuity, we call this experimentation and discovery. So you explore possibilities, and that's in the context of, it's not separate from, it's not like you learn and then you start exploring. No, it all happens together. And then either something comes out of it or it doesn't. And you know, you can point to moments where different things came out of Elon Musk's interest in different technologies. You know, there was a novel battery technology and approach that was being worked on, and he invested $100,000 in it because he was really interested in it, in particular for electric cars. But this is way before he got involved with Tesla.
Yep.
Then, of course, when he gets involved with Tesla, there's a technology there that, you know, existed that might not have existed anyway, and it's being developed by someone who, you know, has a shared appreciation with you when it comes time to actually get Tesla going. So, you know, connection and discovery and exploration are all going together. But to really have accomplished things, and what, you know, we say ingenuity is the overlap of curiosity and ambition. There has to be some drive, and it doesn't have to be with every person. You can have a team where one person provides the drive, but to really get things done, there has to be that ambition to make the world a better place. Because that's when you really start drilling in, and I'm going to say making sacrifices, although I don't think that's exactly the right way to put it.
Nope.
But you start doing the things that are necessary, making priorities that allow you to accomplish things. And if you read Elon Musk's history, it's all over that, you know, probably to excess, which, you know, we should all be grateful for, because that means we didn't have to do it. But there needs to be all three elements together. There has to be connection, there has to be exploration, discovery, and then there has to be that ambition that all goes together to create the environment where ingenuism really, really works. And the results are astonishing.
And you know, the ambition is pretty amazing. I mean, his dedication, the amount of work he puts in, a lot of entrepreneurs and a lot of startups, they sleep at their desk, but it seems like Elon Musk has taken this to the next level in terms of just the amount of work he's put into every single one of these ventures, and his ability, which I think might be really unique, that I don't know very many people or anybody who's really done on the scale that he has, of doing that on so many different things, that is things that are completely different, right? I mean, right now he's CEO of Tesla. He's basically CEO of going to Mars, and he's CEO of Twitter. He seems to be working somewhat hard on each one of them somehow. They're only 24 hours a day in a day. He's in the White House right now, as far as I can tell, as we're taping this, to meet about AI, because of course Tesla is basically is to a large extent an AI company, and he has strong views about AI. So he's everywhere doing everything, and it truly is that drive and that passion and that ambition is there. The biography gets into, from the interview I gather, a lot of the you know, what drove him to have the drive. But at the end of the day, people have all kinds of experiences when they're young. Some people choose to not use those experiences to give them drive and ambition. And some people take those experiences and drive themselves to excel. And certainly that's what's happened with Musk.
Yes. And you know, you mentioned The Boring Company, which the name was too boring for you to even remember it.
That's right.
And Neuralink. And I don't know to the extent he's involved in the day-to-day. You can't imagine that it's a lot, given everything else on his plate. And sometimes Musk is criticized for that. But it's important to remember that part of exploration is deciding which way you're going to go. You know, you can not continuously experiment and never really run with the experiments that are working the best and expect to accomplish the kind of things that Elon Musk has accomplished. So I don't see that as criticism at all. You know, arguably, you get more, have a bigger impact on the world if he was a little more focused, but I'm certainly not going to state that with any sort of confidence. It's just a possibility, because you can't argue with results. And that's what it comes down to. It as you know, I don't know that Elon Musk is an incredible entrepreneur. But I know he's incredibly entrepreneurial, and he is one in a billion when it comes to getting things done. And that's really the secret to impacting the world. It's almost a tautology, is, you know, great ideas, interesting insights. Those are not what really drive progress. It's actually taking those and impacting the world.
And you know, he has the ability to build teams and to create companies. So he can come up with an idea for a Boeing company and, you know, sketch something out and then find a few people. And he's not really interested in it in terms of pursuing it as an entrepreneur. Go do this, right? And he has the ability, partially because of all the credibility he's built up, to do that. I think most of the criticism he's getting is over Twitter, and maybe from Tesla shareholders, worried that he's not dedicating enough money, time to Tesla while he's playing around at Twitter. And it all depends on how Twitter goes. If Twitter turns into an amazing investment, everybody will look unbelievably foolish. But we all know that failure is possible. Twitter might not turn out to be, have been a distraction for him, not something real. Although his ambition, of course, is to turn Twitter into X, which is what he's called it, and X being the app that does everything, right? And that would be, if he's the one to give us AI with the assistant that does everything through Twitter, that would be huge.
And it also wouldn't be shocking, given the results. It's funny because we started talking about the app that does everything in the late 1990s because it seemed like the obvious place for this to go. You know, well before we were even thinking about Uber, there were just so many things that you could do on the internet, but it always required you to go out and find the right platform and then find the right person on that platform and to match. And, you know, as a giant matching machine, the internet could be a much more generalized and powerful tool. And here we are 24 years later, and we still don't have it. But if we do get it, it wouldn't surprise me if it was Elon Musk, because as you pointed out, one of his great skills is building organizations. You know, there's no doubt that Elon Musk working alone could accomplish great things, but nothing like he's been able to accomplish. And that's something that I think is underappreciated about adopting Ingenuism, is that if you are the embodiment of Ingenuism or Muskism or whatever you want to call it, you're going to attract people who are willing to make trade-offs in order to be in that environment, people who are interested in having an environment that supports exploration and discovery, that supports learning from failure and bouncing back from failure, that supports ambition and curiosity. And you end up with the cream of the crop. And I think that's something that startup companies in Silicon Valley instinctively know, that if you offer the right culture, you'll get much better people and have a much better chance of succeeding. But it's not, it's often more adjacent to what their actual goals are instead of being a core principle. And, you know, reading the biography, the earlier biography, you get the sense that very much there's fundamental principles that cannot be sacrificed. And that's the kind of thing that is what attracts Ingenuus.
Yeah. And I'm looking forward to reading this book. Isaac Sen's a really good writer. And it sounds like the story of Musk is interesting on a variety of different levels. And he had unbelievable access to him. So he actually hung out with him and got access, spent a lot of time with his parents, with his brother. So it delves a lot into his personal life as well, but which is interesting in and of itself. So I don't know, how many kids does Musk have, 13 or something? I think he's been an Ingenuus there as well.
Well, and you know, the more experimentation we have for the next generation, probably the better off we're going to be. You said something earlier about Tesla being an AI company. And, you know, we talked last time about the downside of slowing progress in areas like AI because of nebulous risks. And I think that, you know, all of Elon Musk's companies are good examples of that. You know, we right now, I think SpaceX is waiting for the next launch to get approval from the FAA. And as soon as you hear that, you're like, okay, well, now we're basically back to NASA, because the government is the choke point. And that's something that never seems to speed up and always seems to slow down. And that's disastrous, because if you think about SpaceX, even if there is no more progress, if somehow there were no more improvements, they've already reduced the cost of getting mass into orbit by something like 90% compared to before they started. They've already got the Starlink system up, which was, you know, something that people dreamed about, but no one else actually accomplished. And those two things alone are going to change the world. But what would be even better is if we could see another 90% drop in the cost of getting things into space, and a full Starlink network in orbit, and, you know, start mining the moon and the asteroids and go to Mars. Like, and it's hard to imagine what the spillovers would be. Nobody was thinking about Starlink when SpaceX was first launching. I don't think even Elon Musk was thinking about
Starlink. No, I don't think he was.
But now it's contributing $1.4 billion in annual revenue and growing, and, you know, with a fixed cost and you know, long-term cash flows, it's turned out to be an incredible, you know, area of value creation. And Tesla's, you know, the same thing. If it wasn't for Tesla, we wouldn't have the advances in battery technology that we have today. We wouldn't have the backup battery systems that exist today. All of that stuff would be moving along at the snail's pace it was moving along before. Yeah. And we wouldn't be close to, we wouldn't have semi-autonomous driving, and we wouldn't be close to the possibility of autonomous driving. And the idea that we should dial back, we should slow down because of the risks of, for example, autonomous driving, is incredibly frustrating to me. You know, I've said it before, Tesla is a better driver than I am. Now, in certain situations, that's not true, but generally it's true. And the data is now finally available to really prove that out. Not only do autonomous vehicles get into fewer accidents, but most of the accidents they get into are caused by other drivers.
Yep.
And so they basically cause no accidents. It's not zero, but it's a very small fraction, single digit percent of what a human driver would cause. But they also get into fewer accidents caused by other drivers. So we've all been, you know, the last accident I remember for you was a pretty severe accident completely caused by another driver. Well, I'm going to go out on a limb and say you're never going to get better over the rest of your life at avoiding those types of accidents.
Absolutely.
And I will also say that autonomous vehicle already is better at avoiding them and will get even better over time if we let them. So yep. Not only will they not be dangerous to us, but they'll be able to prevent accidents that would have happened because of human error, not in the vehicle where the autonomous driving is actually happening. And then if you have fully autonomous, then you know, the number of accidents would be similar to what happens with, you know, airplanes or elevators. You know, they just never run into each other. They're designed that way, that they never do that. So that's a future that would be incredibly valuable for humankind. And to look at any sort of the risks that we've actually taken in terms of the number of accidents, and there have been accidents, there have been deaths associated with autonomous vehicles, but to take those as evidence that we should slow down, it's actually evidence that we should speed up.
So you brought up driverless cars. TechCrunch is reporting that Cruise is the company that does driverless taxis in San Francisco is days away from receiving federal approval. Again, there's that federal approval to begin producing and deploying driverless cars without steering wheels or pedals, because who needs them, right, in a driverless car? So that's on the one hand. On the other hand, California Senate just approved AB 316, which requires autonomous vehicles weighing over 10,000 pounds to have human safety operators, in other words, a driver, physically present whenever on California public roads. Self-driving trucks are now basically illegal. Newsom might actually veto that bill, so we can hope. But again, the constraints are not technology, the constraints are not entrepreneurs, the constraints are not lack of ingenuity, the constraints are political.
And that is devastating. To the extent that those who want to slow down technology win, we'll never know what we're missing. But can you imagine a car that didn't have to be designed around the driver? I mean, first of all, there's a bunch of space wasted around the driver, but there's nothing about a car that is particularly comfortable.
Yep.
There's no reason that if you had a driverless taxi that you wouldn't have it, you know, be able to do multiple configurations that could include mapping. That you couldn't have a table where people could sit across from each other. It could completely change how we think about travel right now. And honestly, I kind of enjoy driving in some circumstances.
Yeah, me too.
And if we ever go fully autonomous in our lifetime, I will kind of miss driving. But then, you know, there'll be preserves where you can go off and drive, where autonomous vehicles are not allowed and only stick shift sports cars are allowed or something.
Absolutely.
That's a problem I hope that we have to solve, and it'll be easily solved, because, you know, the car that we're going to get in and drive to the Central Coast today, it's not particularly comfortable for human beings.
No.
And it's certainly not high productivity.
And I'm sure there were people who loved riding their buggies and loved their horses and loved all that. So future generations are not going to remember loving driving. So
and people who love horses can still ride horses.
Exactly. 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 All right, Robert. Looking forward to reading the book and talking to you next week. Or we're taking next week off, week after next.